WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. South Korea's acting president Choi Sang-mok has addressed the nation after a horrific plane crash at an airport in the country's southwest. 179 people were killed. He's heard here through an interpreter.
The government will declare Muan a special disaster zone and provide all necessary support for recovery efforts, assistance to families who lost their loved ones, and treatment for the injured people.
Reporter Alex Jensen is following developments from Seoul.
It may be weeks before flight data can be decoded after black box damage, but there has been much speculation about a bird strike at least being a factor. Two flight attendants have been receiving hospital treatment, the only survivors among 181 on board the plane that crashed at Muan International Airport.
Severe thunderstorms, possible tornadoes have made their way through Georgia and northwestern Florida. WHNT-TV reporter Archie Snowden says Athens, Georgia was hit hard.
A tree that once stood for nearly a century is now on top of some cars and HVAC units, and debris from businesses are now all over the road. A building near a museum that famously had a huge mural is now gone, as well as damage to fire station number 3 here downtown. Now, we talked to several people who live in nearby homes, and they say that they heard winds pick up and they saw lightning strikes, but when they walked outside, they did not expect to see the extensive damage to the square.
In the storms, one person died in Iredell County, North Carolina today. Saturday, one person was killed in Texas, another in Mississippi. The organizers of Times Square's New Year's Eve celebrations held their annual confetti test today.
3, 2, 1, Happy New Year! Whoa, look at that confetti go. Let's get some more confetti out there.
The test checks the airworthiness of the confetti. Doctors are urging the Biden administration to do more to deal with the threat of bird flu. On CBS's Face of the Nation, former Baltimore Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Nguyen.
The viruses could exchange genes. You could develop a new hybrid virus. And if you now have a virus that's more contagious and causes more severe disease, that's when it becomes a major threat to humankind.
The first case of bird flu in a patient in the U.S. was confirmed in Louisiana last week. Two family films have dominated the holiday box office. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 won the three-day weekend over Mufasa, but just barely.
Sonic, you finally found your family.
According to studio estimates, Sonic sold $38 million in tickets. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Congress has extended the 2018 Farm Bill while they continue to work on a new one, leaving Wisconsin farmers somewhat relieved but still worried. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
One of the biggest problems cited with the current farm bill is that it was negotiated more than 5 years ago, so the crop reference prices are outdated. Paul Mitchell, agriculture and economics professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, explains the reference prices allow payments to farmers when a crop falls below a certain level.
Prices have been declining on the corn and soybeans, and the process is used to create this support in these times of thin negative margins. They're out of date. Those floors were set in 2018, and you know, we've gone through a lot of inflation, and so you know, $1,000 isn't what it used to be.
Mitchell says farm organizations have been asking Congress to increase crop reference prices. The farm bill was extended again for another year as a part of a spending bill to avert a federal government shutdown. Mitchell says a lot of uncertainty looms with the incoming administration's goal to cut budget costs.
So my real worry is that agriculture will be collateral damage for the new administration as they pursue other political priorities where, you know, agriculture is not their number one priority. And they will take the cost of agricultural hurt to address these issues they want to address that would partly help them get elected.
Other areas of concern in the farm bill, he says, are crop insurance, conservation programs, and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which is still offering benefits too low to help those who need them, according to an Urban Institute report. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Watch out for some areas of dense fog giving way to plenty of clouds across the area today. Our winds will remain light as highs top out in the upper 30s. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies. Could be some patchy fog. Overnight low temperatures dropping into the lower 30s. Right now, it's 31.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Appleton-based comedian John Egan into the studio. Then Chicago comedians Bill Gorgo and Jim McHugh join the show to promote a New Year's Eve extravaganza in Port Washington. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review, and my name is Jim Santel. I am your host on this, a broadcast of Civic Media, both this hour and next hour here on all the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Delighted and honored that you have chosen to spend some of your time this weekend in conversation with me and with my producer, Max. As always, in this hour and next hour, taking your phone calls, your questions, your inquiries at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Max always reminds me that you can also drop one of those questions or inquiries into the chat box here at Civic Media, and we will attend to those communications from you as a part of our weekend broadcast, Amicus, a law review. As always, taking our name from the Latin and also the legal term amicus, amici, amici, amicus, a law review coming from the notion of a friend of the court, providing information, insight, perspective, something about the world that may be helpful in terms of decision-making, of resolving issues before us, not only in courts, but also in our lives and our livelihoods. Delighted and honored once again to have you be a part of our broadcast on this weekend. As always on Amicus, a law review, this the last broadcast of the calendar year for this broadcast program. We're going to be talking a lot about the current news events of just this past week. And then as a teaser, a program note into our second hour, as promised last broadcast, we'll just spend some time talking about 2024 year in review. Yes, indeed, lots of programs out there in the media spending time focusing on the significant things that have happened in our lives and in our livelihoods in these last 12 months. We'll be focusing on some of the major issues in the areas of rule of law and government and the aspiration for justice, which is our mission, our purpose here on our broadcast, talking about 15 or those of those that have animated us during this past calendar year. And of course, also taking your ideas and your comments, your inquiries, your questions about those and other matters that could fill a list of probably 150 significant rule of law stories from just this past year. We have limited them to 15 in the interest of time and focus, spending a lot of our time in our second hour talking about those. And then also starting our broadcast this weekend by talking about those major government and rule of law and justice related stories on our syllabus. As always, it is ambitious, but it is achievable as we together work through all of those significant news stories. What are those events that are going to highlight in our first hour our discussion. First of all, we're going to talk about something that happened early this past week, and that is the latest decisions by our current president. His name is Joseph Biden, and he has commuted the sentences of 37 additional federal defendants, people on death row. We're going to talk about commutation once again, the difference between that and pardoning individuals who have suffered criminal convictions in our federal system. We'll talk about why these are especially important and why, in many ways, it is a living up to the commitment he made during his campaign in 2020 on the death penalty, to begin not only to pull back from a history of death penalty impositions in our nation and in our states, but also to live up to that commitment about justice in America. We'll talk about what he has said in commuting the sentences of 37, virtually all, not quite all, but virtually all of the defendants on death row in the federal system. Important to emphasize that, because, of course, a president can only pardon those people in federal custody under a federal judgment, not a state sentence. We'll talk all about that. We'll talk also about the environment. Three major stories from just this past week. Again, the current president, Joe Biden, announcing some goals, announcing some grants of monies, even in his waning days as the president, to ensure that our future air, the air we breathe, that we consume here in the United States. And yes, of course, derivatively, we're all in this together across the globe. Every nation, every person on the face of this planet. We'll talk about the goals that he has established that should bring us into 2035, if indeed future presidents, including the next president, were to decide to follow up on those goals for clean air, addressing greenhouse gases, some major announcements that he made just this past week. We'll talk also in the area of environment about a major case coming out of the state of Montana, a Supreme Court case, a decision affirming a lower court judgment, a trial court judgment entered after 16 youth, young people, yes, with a lawyer, but young people brought into the court there in Montana a petition under the Constitution of Montana that resulted in a major finding, the first time in the United States history that a court has found a constitutional right to have legislation introduced that is sensitive to and responsive to the environmental needs and interests of the population. And finally, we'll go back to New York and talk about Kathy Hochul, who, of course, is the governor of the state of New York, and talk about something that she also announced just this past week in the area of greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases also animating something that happened in New York. We'll talk about that as well. All of that in the area as 2024 begins to come to an end. A lot of focus on the environment as well, for good reason. Necessarily needs to continue well into the new year as well. And we will see. We will continue to monitor on this broadcast and others of Civic Media exactly where we are in this all-important issue, arguably the threshold issue to all the rest of them, for the future of humanity, the future of our nation, the world, and all of its residents. Coming back to the United States of America, we're going to talk about a major report just released about the state of homelessness in America and talk about some jumps in the numbers that may, in fact, be a bit antiquated, a bit out of date, but nonetheless are reflective of the continuing issues, the continuing challenges that cities, states, and all of us have across our nation when it comes to people who do not have homes in America. We'll talk about the numbers, the increase in those numbers reported in 2024, why those numbers may be a little bit inflated, and importantly, remembering again what the Supreme Court has said in just the previous term about this also equally important issue of homelessness, finding that under the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, yes, that's the one that prohibits cruel and unusual punishment in all sorts of ways of our lives. Cruel and unusual punishment does not prohibit municipalities and other government leaders from imposing, establishing, and enforcing laws that keep people from congregating in public, keep people from using parks as their homes. We'll talk about homelessness here on our last broadcast of 2024. Then some other news, much in the headlines of recent days, a lot having to do with TikTok. And yes, indeed, that deadline coming up in early January, just days from now, having to do with whether or not TikTok remains a viable and legal, lawful entity operating here in the United States of America. We'll talk about what the Supreme Court is going to do, as we have done before, And the oral argument that they've got scheduled on January 10th, one of the first things they're doing in the new calendar year, we'll talk about what that case is all about. And yes, indeed, our president-elect just this past week weighing in inside that Supreme Court case, filing, yes, indeed, an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief, in which he has gone on record saying that he would like more time to see if he can address issues related to the future legitimacy, the legality of TikTok after the Congress, as you may well recall, in the present Congress, passed legislation that prohibits the continued vitality and activity, the business operation of TikTok, unless it divests from any Chinese connection. We'll talk about TikTok in the news, and then also in connection with the United States Supreme Court, a major report that flew under the headlines much this past week, issued by the leadership of the Senate Judiciary Committee, addressing all kinds of things related to the judiciary in America, including the number of judges pending right now for nomination, the number of judges obviously confirmed by the Senate in these waning days of the Biden administration, what we can look forward to in terms of a future judiciary committee that plainly now in the future United States Senate will be controlled, leadership being taken over by the Republicans as opposed to the Democrats, in these waning days of the Democratic control of the committee, a major report issued just this past week, almost 100 pages, commenting on the judiciary in America right now and talking in particular once again. Yes, that's right. We cannot escape it because it continues to animate the discussion when it comes to the Supreme Court, talking once again about Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito and other justices on the Supreme Court, reporting on the ethical challenges that they continue to have. Additional trips not reported by Clarence Thomas, even in his supplemental filing with the United States government, with the administrative office of U.S. courts. We'll talk about why that report, which did not get a lot of focus this past week in the midst of many other news stories, why it is a major rule of law story. It is one of the last times, at least for a while, that the Democrats in the Senate will be voicing their views about the United States judiciary and commenting once again on this absolute need for us to have a viable and enforceable rule, a code of ethics for the United States Supreme Court. And then, time permitting, a little bit more about South Korea, what's going on there, and the latest rule of law actions by the Congress there, the National Assembly, what it has done just in the past couple of days, hours actually, impeaching now the acting president. All of that, of course, coming, as you well know, in the wake of the decision by the previous president, also subject to impeachment, also subject to judicial review in that nation pursuant to their processes, also being subject to review by the population of that nation that has risen up in the wake of that very, very inappropriate and arguably unconstitutional attempt by the former president to establish rule of law in Seoul and other cities and places around the nation of South Korea, a democratic republic. What happened just recently in that nation that also animates the news of the rule of law just this past week? It is an ambitious but nonetheless an achievable agenda here on Amicus, a Law Review. And as always, Max and I inviting your questions, your inquiries at 855-752-4842. Be a part of our discussion on this, the last broadcast here on Civic Media of Amicus, a Law Review. Stay with us for more of our discussion this weekend.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. As 2024 comes to a close, we're taking our annual look back at the year that was, recapping our most read, most listened to, and most impactful stories of the year. If you're new to learning about the recombobulation area, this would be a great place to start to see what we're all about. This year, we covered the RNC in Milwaukee and the DNC in Chicago and broke stories that made national news along the way. We wrote about the fight for fair maps and covered elections in the state legislature like no one else. I wrote opinion columns and feature stories and conducted extended sit-down interviews like one with Senator Tammy Baldwin. I hosted podcasts and radio shows and, of course, joined the Civic Media Network, where you've heard me all over the airwaves for the last few months. This last year was discombobulating at times, but we did our best to make sense of it all, and we've got a whole lot more recombobulation in store for the year ahead in 2025.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name, Jim Santel, your host for this hour and also next hour here on the broadcast stations, inviting you as always to be a part of our broadcast. It is the final one of this calendar year, but we're going to continue an early program note about what we're doing next week. And that is that on our show on the 4th of January of 2025, we're going to do the bookend portion of what we're beginning in the second hour of this broadcast. We're going to talk about some rule of law issues that are going to be on the docket of all of us in 2025. This broadcast talking about things that have happened in the past. Next broadcast talking about those things that we might reasonably anticipate. And of course, assuming that an awful lot will be unanticipated in the rule of law and justice and government, as has been the tradition recently in the United States of America. We begin this weekend in our broadcast talking about the latest commutations in this broad category of pardons extended by the current president. You may recall well, based upon our previous discussions of this all-important constitutional issue, it is a constitutional prerogative, something vested in the discretion of the chief executive to issue pardons and issue commutations, reprieves, if you will, by virtue of the office of the presidency established, again, in the Constitution, written in there by James Madison, passed by the states. And it is one of the very few, if the only executive power that is unchecked, virtually unchecked by any other branch of government. That, in part, is why it is so controversial. But it's also giving rise to an awful lot of activity in this administration, as it has in previous administrations of all varieties and all sides of the political aisle. Just this past Monday, President Biden commuting the sentences of nearly all prisoners on federal death row, sparing the lives of 37 men just about a month or so before he leaves office. Now, once again, you recall, well, a pardon wipes out a conviction, doesn't remove it from the books of history, but does take it off of the official records and rolls and documents of the official judgments in courts. A commutation, however, leaves the guilty verdict, leaves the judgment, the criminal judgment in place, but reduces some or all of the punishment. And that indeed is what Joe Biden has done just this past week in commuting, not pardoning, commuting the sentences of 37 people, all of them convicted of murder, and reducing the terms of the judgments previously imposed upon them of execution, the death penalty previously imposed upon them in the federal system, reducing those sentences to life without the possibility of parole instead of facing execution. None of these people going to see the light of day. None of these people going to be released from the Bureau of Prisons, but they will no longer be subject to execution. And you may recall well that this was a big topic of discussion in the 2020 campaign, when Joe Biden was presenting to the United States his position, his view, the federal death penalty should in fact be a part of our past. Now, the Supreme Court, as I made reference to already, has said that under the Eighth Amendment, a number of cases under the Eighth Amendment, the Supreme Court tells us it is not cruel and unusual punishment to perform, to pursue the death penalty. And that's why we have around the country a patchwork of different approaches on this issue. Some states where the death penalty is in fact imposed, some where it is not. In the federal system, of course, once again, that is a decision made by judges and juries during the course of the federal process. But up to now, there have been 40 people right now on death row facing federal execution. And the president, not only in his campaign of 2020, but also in recent times, has called again, has changed his position from what it was many, many years ago when he was in Congress and said he no longer believes that the death penalty is an appropriate response to criminal conduct. Still remains a very controversial matter, of course. He said this: "I am more convinced than ever that we must stop the use of the death penalty at the federal level. In good conscience, I cannot stand back and let an administration, a new administration," he's talking about Donald Trump, "resume executions that I halted." And he said that the commutations were consistent with the standard he has imposed for halting executions in cases other than terrorism and hate-motivated mass murder. Went on to say, important for him to say this out loud, important for it to be heard by all of us. He said, "Make no mistake, I condemn these murderers. I grieve for the victims of their despicable acts, and I ache for all the families who have suffered unimaginable and irreparable loss, acknowledging again the heinous nature of what they have done, and acknowledging that for that, the punishment in the wake of his commutations will now be that they will remain in federal prison for the rest of their lives until the days that they die. Of the 37 men whose sentences were commuted, 15 are white, 15 are black, 6 are Latino, 1 is Asian. They were sentenced in 16 different states, including 3 that have abolished the death penalty. 9 are on death row because they were convicted of killing federal fellow prisoners." In other words, they're in prison and convicted of killing fellow federal prisoners. That also resulted in judgments against them. Who did the president not commute sentences for? The 3 men who will still face federal execution, again, fall in that category that he defined as he described what he was doing. You know their names well because they have been in the stories here on Amicus, a law review, this year and in previous years as well. We remember well the heinous nature, the horrific nature, the murders they committed in cold blood. They're Robert Bowers. He's 52 years old. He was the one in 2018 gunned down 11 worshipers, 11 people gathered at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. You recall that horrific event and the trial that followed that, resulting in the imposition of the death penalty, the federal death penalty, as to Mr. Bowers. Dylann Roof, he's 30. He is that white supremacist who way back in 2015, what did he do? He went into the parishioners at that church in Charleston, South Carolina, opening fire and killing 9 people. 9 people dead as a result of his hate crime, that horrific murder back in 2015. And Jokhar Tsarnaev, 31. He is one of the 2 brothers, you may recall, who carried out that terrible bombing of the Boston Marathon way back in 2013, killing 3 people, maiming more than a dozen other people, continued. Like the victim survivors in those other matters continue to suffer as a result of the terrible, horrific murders that those 3 committed. They are not subject to commutation, in part because their processes will still go forward. They will remain on death row as this president leaves office. And of course, we know that there are other groups out there that are still advocating for this president. He still has about a month or so, a little bit less than that, actually, to do more things as the president of the United States of America. He could commute more sentences. He could pardon more individuals. Recall well that a number of days, weeks ago, he commuted the sentences of about 1,500 people, a record one day of people who again, were falling into the category of nonviolent criminals, including some drug offenses, 1,500 people. And of course, the one that didn't start all of this discussion, but certainly began its recent attention by all of us, he pardoned his own son, Hunter Biden, for the violations, his own criminal convictions. Those happened, of course, in a gun case and an attacks case in federal court. All of that happening in recent weeks and recent months as pardons
continue to animate our discussion here on this broadcast and throughout America. Stay with us for more of this discussion, discussion about the environment too, about what this president is doing here on Amicus, a law review.
The Tap.
CBS News Brief, 179 people have been killed in the crash of a Boeing 737. It happened at an airport in South Korea. Pilot and aviation consultant Tim Atkinson says it may be tough to get much from the recovered flight data and cockpit voice recorders.
A number of things suggest that electrical power was at least disrupted on board this aircraft, and that may mean the recorders weren't running.
Storms that roared through the southeast caused a lot of damage and at least two deaths, and Athens, Georgia was also hit hard.
This looks like a completely different place. I mean, it looks like something out of a movie out there. Absolutely terrible. Haven't seen anything like it.
One person was killed today in Iredell County, North Carolina. At the Sacramento airport, things are going smoothly for flyers returning home for the holidays.
It could have been a lot worse.
But this woman says some of her relatives have had a tough go of it.
Ours wasn't delayed too bad, but we had family who had to go to other airports who couldn't stop at their original airports and had to go to another airport and get a flight from that airport.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Badgers skate to victory. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college hockey. The Wisconsin Badgers beat Ferris State in a shutout, 8-0 last night in the holiday faceoff at Fiserv Forum. Three Badgers players, Quinn Finley, Rylan Mosley, and Kyle Kekkonen, each scored a pair of goals. Wisconsin advances to the final tonight against UConn. NBA. The Bucks lose in Chicago to the Bulls, 116-111. Damian Lillard was back with 29 points and 12 assists, but it wasn't enough. Giannis Antetokounmpo missing his fourth straight game. He's dealing with a non-COVID illness. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers.
It felt like we were playing with fool's gold the entire night. I thought defensively we had no presence. You know, think about it. I think they were shooting 58% at halftime. We were shooting 44% and it was a two-point game. So you felt like either we're going to start really defending and then our offense will go up, or we're not and it's going to be a tight game, and that's what it was.
NFL, the Packers against the Vikings in Minnesota. A recap coming up after the game tonight. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Watch out for some areas of dense fog giving way to plenty of clouds across the area today. Our winds will remain light as highs top out in the upper 30s. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies. Could be some patchy fog. Overnight low temperatures dropping into the lower 30s. It's 33 at our studios.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A 2023 decision in an Arkansas redistricting case found individual voters did not have a private right of action to challenge the maps. The state of Louisiana tried the same tactic in its chaotic gerrymandering case, but was refused on June 24th. Be looking for another challenge in 2025. Defying precedent, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals held in a 2023 Arkansas racial gerrymandering case that individual voters do not have a private right of action under the VRA Section 2. It said only the U.S. Justice Department could bring such cases, despite individuals having filed 90% of previous challenges. Calling it radical, scholars expected it to be quickly overturned, but this January, the full Eighth Circuit refused to rehear the case. Seeing an opening, Louisiana asked the full Fifth Circuit to rehear its gerrymandering case on the same grounds, with 13 other Republican attorneys general urging a no private right of action decision. In a close vote Monday, the Fifth Circuit refused that rehearing. For now, the Eighth Circuit decision still only affects Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. But it's clear that private right of action is the new battleground and will almost certainly reach the U.S. Supreme Court. We've linked to more on the private right of action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW Systems spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people in Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Dom Selvia.
Next time, what does former FBI and CIA Director William Webster have to say about Cash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard? Also, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kay, on the rise of homelessness and political exhaustion. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel. Thank you for once again joining me in our weekend broadcast, talking about some major issues in this last period of 2024 that continue to affect us and will affect us in the future, not only with respect to rule of law and justice. Just completed our review of what the president has done with respect to commuting death sentences of people on federal death row, 37 of them, not all of them, excluding three people, moving now into something else he did just this past week, and that is in the area of environment. And that's going to be a story not only as we close out 2024, but plainly for years to come, and indeed in our discussion next week when we talk about things that we can anticipate into 2025 and beyond. Environment and its intersection with the rule of law, with justice, with government, that will loom large on our syllabus. And join us for that discussion. This week, however, Joe Biden being heard once again on another major issue that he touted during the course of the 2020 campaign, and that has also been a part of his administration for the past nearly 4 years, announcing just on Thursday of this past week an aggressive new climate goal for the United States of America. He says to us that our country should seek to slash its greenhouse gas emissions by at least 61% below 2005 levels by 2035. Three different numbers there. Important to do the math on all that. 61%, slash it to at least 61% below 2005 levels by 2035. The target, of course, not binding. And yes, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, gee, isn't that the kind of thing that a new president can change? And the answer is yes. These are plainly aspirational goals that he is setting. They're very aggressive, undeniably. A promise of deeper emissions cuts will likely be ignored by the Trump administration based upon what Donald Trump has said in his campaign for the presidency. And in his first term, Donald Trump, among other things, has called global warming a scam, a scam. Biden administration officials said that they hoped that by the president announcing this ambitious, but once again, if we all work together, achievable goal, some significant slashes in greenhouse gas emissions in the coming years and decades, hope that that would encourage state and local governments, even if the federal government is not a part of this, to cut emissions that are rapidly heating the planet, as we all know, even if the federal government does, in fact, pull back. This announcement, of course, as I indicated, caps about 4 years or so of climate policies from this president, who has sought to make global warming a signature focus of his administration. Joe Biden, in his announcement of all of this, also described his pumping billions of dollars into clean energy technologies and regulating pollution from power plants and automobiles, describing all of that that he has done recently and in the past through legislation that we know well. He described it as the boldest climate agenda in American history. Indeed, it may well be. And he went on to say that American industry will keep inventing and keep investing. He said state, local, and this is the point, state, local, and tribal governments, he said, will keep stepping up. And again, that's a backhand way of saying if the federal government does not follow this encouragement, needless to say, the state, local, and tribal governments can, in fact, do just that. Together, he said, we will turn this existential threat, a threat that goes to our very existence, into a once-in-a-generation opportunity to transform our nation for generations to come. So we've got this new pledge, this new commitment articulated again as aspirational, cutting emissions 61 to 66% below 2005 levels by 2035. That's a very significant update, a very big update from commitments that the United States has already made. In 2021, Joe Biden promised the country would cut its heat trapping emissions at least 50% below 2005 levels by 2030. And all of that, of course, aspirational. Last year, emissions were about 17% below 2005 levels, largely because, as we know from reporting on all this, their electrical utilities have retired many of their coal plants in favor of some cheaper mechanisms like cleaner gas and wind and solar power. This year, emissions, according to all of the authorities, are expected to stay roughly flat, in part because some of those rising electricity demands have led power companies to burn record amounts, great amounts of gas, and those sort of offset the renewable energy practices of recent years. You recall well that this is all tied up with that 2015 Paris climate agreement, each country at that time agreeing to submit a plan for curbing these greenhouse gas emissions, those pledges being updated every 5 years. According to this, that Paris Pact, which again remains controversial, not just in the present campaign, but look for the future president to remove us once again from that Paris Pact, countries expected to issue a new round of plans before the next United Nations climate summit that's scheduled for Brazil in November of next year. All of that as Joe Biden announces these aspirational goals that will long post-date his time in the presidency. It could, of course, also pose much greater challenges for all of us, as not only the federal government likely does not follow that, but the state governments as well try to address these issues. Donald Trump has said that he would pull us out of the Paris Climate Agreement, as he did in the first term. And in a statement contemporaneous with what the current president has said, the indication is that Donald Trump, according to the statement, will, quote, once again deliver clean air and water for American families while making America wealthy again. On Thursday, even as the president, the current president, was announcing these plans, reaffirming the monies that our government has sunk into clean energy and clean air plans, governors taking up much of what the current president has wanted them to do, have a bipartisan group of governors, coalition of governors, 24 different states. They have announced that they would, in fact, work together to try to meet that new goal. Again, that, whether the federal government follows that or not. Kathy Hochul, about whom we'll hear in just a moment, she said this new collective goal will serve as our North Star. Our North Star. She's speaking on behalf of a bipartisan, Republicans and Democrats alike, governors out there committed to doing what the president wants the government, wants all of us to do as we continue to address issues of environment in our nation. Some other good news coming out of all of this, and that is some interesting news coming from a court, a Supreme Court in the state of Montana. This is a state court. This is not a federal court. This is a state court, the state Supreme Court. Just this past week, Wednesday, upholding a landmark victory for, yes, indeed, some youthful people, about 16 young people, some minors, M-I-N-O-R-S, who brought a lawsuit challenging the actions of the legislature and not accommodating, not in some way reflecting their concern about the environment in legislative policies. And they brought this lawsuit and brought it to trial a number of weeks, months ago. A case is Held versus Montana, Ricky Held, 23. She is the named plaintiff in the case. She said that when the Montana Supreme Court that issued its affirmation, its affirmance of a lower court ruling, a major movement in support of a future of cleaner environment. Specifically, what did the Montana Supreme Court do just on Wednesday? Upheld a landmark victory, this lower court victory, for youth climate activists. They affirmed this decision by a lower court, a trial court judge, last year, that the state's energy policies, the things that the administration does, the state of Montana does, violated their constitutional rights to a clean environment. The principal plaintiff here, again, Ricky Held, who's 23 years old now, she said the ruling is a victory not just for us, but for every young person whose future is threatened by climate change. It's a landmark case, admittedly, once again, it's a state Supreme Court case, because it appears to be the first court in the United States of America to recognize a constitutional right to a stable climate. Now, of course, this is invoking the state constitution itself. That's, of course, in the state of Montana, and language that is specific to that constitution. But nonetheless, it establishes this precedent, and the first time, once again, that a high court has made this determination that indeed, under the language of the constitution, under the law of the state of Montana, individuals, not just youth, but youth focused certainly by this litigation, they have a constitutional right to have energy policies reflect concerns about the future and climate policy in general. All of this, of course, coming as the United States Supreme Court, in cases in the past and certainly in the future, continues to wrestle with the intersection of legislation and of executive action and, yes, indeed, of science, as we all attempt to create a better and safer world. Held versus Montana is the case decided just this past week by the Montana Supreme Court, finding that this climate change issue does have footing, not just in Montana, but presumably in other places, and affirming the constitutional right to individuals, at least to residents of Montana, to have the policies that are implemented by their legislators reflecting concerns about a clean environment, a constitutional dimension. That is no small thing, Held versus Montana. And finally, in this area of environment, which we focus on necessarily in this, the last broadcast of Amicus of 2024, more coming out from Kathy Hochul. We talked already about her affirmation of her interest in supporting other things that the administration is advocating for, this ambitious effort to reduce greenhouse gases in the decade just ahead. Kathy Hochul, once again, the governor of the state of New York, she signed a law on Thursday that does something significant. It requires that companies that are big fossil fuel polluters help pay for repair damage caused by extreme weather, which, again, according to scientists and the people who know what they're talking about, is becoming more common because of greenhouse gas emissions. This is no small thing, once again. This is signing legislation. She is the chief executive, of course, of the state of New York. Signing that legislation, it is now the law. It is called the Climate Change Superfund Act. And yes, indeed, if that sounds familiar, it is premised in many ways upon the federal Superfund law that remains in place that mandates that companies who are responsible for polluting the environment be responsible for paying for its cleanup. In many ways, Superfund sites and Superfund cleanups have been part of our language, our lingo, for many, many decades here. This particular act requires that companies responsible for the bulk of carbon emissions, the buildups that happen plainly in the state of New York and presumably other places, as we know, air is not common to just one state. It's common throughout the entire planet, right, across the United States and every nation on the planet. For the bulk of carbon emissions build up between 2000 and 2024, this new Climate Change Superfund Act in the state of New York requires that they pay about $3 billion each year for the next 25 years, attempting again to remedy in some ways the past sins, if you will, of the environmental damage. And so what Governor Hochul said is this. She said, with nearly every record rainfall, heat wave, and coastal storm, New Yorkers, and yes, she's talking about the people who are electing her, her constituents, people who are not voting for her, but they're all her constituents, right? She's talking about New Yorkers, but basically she's talking about all of us as well, because the things she's talking about plainly impact all of us, not just in the state of New York. She says New Yorkers are increasingly burdened with billions of dollars in health, safety, and environmental consequences due to polluters that have historically harmed our environment. That's significant. That's her mission. That's the purpose, once again, of a legislature that passed this law and that she signed. It is now the law of the state of New York. Again, not unprecedented in terms of the kind of thing that a Superfund Act does, but certainly in recent times, significant that a state now taking its place in this effort to address greenhouse gas emissions. The law, as I indicated, plainly modeled on the original Superfund law that was established way back in 1980, 45 years ago. And that, of course, in the federal system, under federal oversight by agencies, requires company to pay for the cleanup of toxic waste that was accomplished, that was affected by incidents like oil and chemical spills. We've had a lot of those in America, and you have known those based upon your own focus on the news in this area. New York's law, once again, focuses on pollution, according to Kathy Hochul. According to the legislation itself, produced by the combustion of fossil fuels, which again results in warming of the atmosphere, causing extreme weather, floods, storms, and more frequent problems, as she has said. All of that happening in New York in the Arab environment just this past week. As we continue on Amicus, we're going to talk about another issue facing us in America now and in the future. Stay with us for that discussion.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. On my YouTube channel, I recently talked to Amanda Clayman, a financial therapist and an all-around excellent person. We talked about how to reduce money anxiety, and her advice was really helpful. She said, unless we have a time to do money, we don't have a time to not do money. Meaning, if we set aside some time to think about and manage our money, it lets our brain stop worrying about money all the time. For example, I have a monthly money meeting with myself, which lowers my money anxiety and helps keep me on top of my finances. If you don't already, set and keep that money meeting with yourself. It'll help your wallet and your peace of mind. Remember what Amanda said, unless you have a time to do money, you don't have a time to not do money. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. This is the last segment of our first hour. Appreciating your staying with me and my wonderful producer, Max, as we discuss these major issues that are affecting our lives and our livelihoods in the state of Wisconsin and throughout our nation, across the planet as well. One of those issues, of course, the environment. We've talked about those new Biden goals for the future for decades, years ahead. We've talked about that major Montana case establishing for the first time that at least in the state of Montana, for the residents there, they have a constitutional right to have their legislators, their policymakers consider climate control, climate issues when affecting accomplishing policy in that state, a major new movement. And in the state of New York, Kathy Hochul, the governor there, not only affirming her commitment to those Biden goals as to greenhouse gas emissions, but also talking about the legislation that she has signed, Superfund legislation in that state, requiring that polluters in that state pay for the pollution they have accomplished. Again, extreme weather, floods, storms, she said, describing the reasons for it. The money raised by New York State under that new legislation signed by Kathy Hochul will do some things that, again, the Superfund site in the federal system, the Superfund site system also does. It funds restoring and protecting coastal wetlands, again, getting that money right back into the environmental restoration, upgrading roads and bridges, improving stormwater drainage systems, all these things plainly having to do with the environment. They're not unrelated to that. Elevating and retrofitting structures there in the state of New York, and investing in recovery efforts from natural disasters, as well as health programs that treat illnesses or injuries that are also related directly to climate change. Again, that connection between the environment, what it caused, what the problems that are caused to the environment by these emissions, and using the monies paid by these producers of the environmental damage, using those monies, $3 billion every year for 25 years, 2000 to 2024, using those monies to accomplish some good there in the state of New York. It is a plan. It is a model that other states plainly can use for addressing the damages already done by climate problems in our nation and in our world generally. All of that happening in these last days of 2024, but plainly the environment continuing to be a major issue into 2025 and candidly for years, decades in our future. Paris Climate Accords also going to be much in the news, as likely the incoming president removes us once again, as he did before, from the commitments made by nations under that pact. All of that, of course, going to be the continuing focus of rule of law issues, because they do intersect so fundamentally with the things that affect our lives. Another issue that falls squarely into that category is homelessness. And homelessness, people without homes, back in the news again just this past week. And we're going to think about not only what a report said about the state of homelessness in our nation, but also the impact of legislation and most significantly, decisions by local municipalities and towns and villages when it comes to enforcing rules and ordinances related to homelessness, and a major decision. We talked about it a lot in recent broadcasts here on Civic Media. This major decision by the United States Supreme Court under the Eighth Amendment that told us whether or not municipalities can do things to address the problems, but also the challenges for all of us in addressing homeless populations. Homelessness soared to the highest level on record this past year. It was driven by forces that included high rents and stagnant wages and a surge in migrants seeking asylum. That all according to a major federal government report that was issued just days ago, late this past week. According to that report, which was released by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, sometimes called HUD, Department of Housing and Urban Development, that does these reports every year, and note that, we'll get back to that issue, about the timing of this report and whether or not it is accurate as of today. HUD releasing this report saying that the number of people in America experiencing homelessness topped 770,000 people. 770,000 people in America, an increase of about 18% over last year, over 2023. And that's the largest annual jump since this count by this federal agency, by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, began in 2007. That is no small jump. That's no small increase in the number of homeless people in America. Now, once again, the report cited multiple reasons for that rise, and some of those I've already indicated. The end of the pandemic era measures to protect the needy, that's one of them, undeniably. Other things related to high rents, stagnant wages, and migrants seeking asylum, all of those things, according to their report, contributed to the spike in the number of people in America who are homeless. The Biden administration, however, again, a part of its work, it produces this report. HUD is a part of the executive branch. Nonetheless, says that the role of the asylum-seeking migrants who overwhelmed the shelter systems in this past year are responsible for this increase, this dramatic increase over the previous years. They're focusing on asylum-seeking migrants as one of the reasons why we have an increase and not a decrease or even a flatlining of this number. The Biden administration also arguing, even as it releases this very candid report, says that the annual count occurred last January, about 11, 12 months or so ago, when the migrant crisis had begun to abate, had begun to go away. And so indicating that probably, if their information is to be believed, that when the HUD issues its next report about this time next year in late 2025, the numbers will probably be not as great. We'll see. Again, the Biden administration saying that the migrant crisis began to abate just as the new year was beginning last year and not fully reflected in the status of things today. And because a nearly year-old record, all this reporting, the argument is that it no longer reflects the current situation that we are presently seeing. Nonetheless, it is significant for America to be mindful of this issue. Nearly every category of unhoused people, according to this report, grew. The rise, especially steep among children, 33%. People in families, 39%. The number of people in shelters rose by about a quarter. Unsheltered homeless rose 7%. The rise in homelessness among older adults continued in the same way. A 6% growth in those 65 or over. Those are significant things. Port also found, interestingly, that veterans are the only group, the lone group, that witnessed a decline in homelessness this past year. that continues to be a part of the long-term trend that unmistakably driven by what is a bipartisan support for housing and services for veterans in America. When we come back after the top of the hour break, we're going to talk more about the implications of homelessness in America and move on to other issues that animated the news in the rule of law this past week here on Amicus, a law review on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Appleton-based comedian John Egan into the studio. Then Chicago comedians Bill Gorgo and Jim McHugh join the show to promote a New Year's Eve extravaganza in Port Washington. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The recovery work continues at Muan International Airport in South Korea. A plane crashed there today, killing 179 people. Two crew members survived. The BBC's Jean McKenzie is there.
Just because the bodies have been retrieved doesn't mean that they have been identified. That process takes a lot longer, and some people have been so badly injured that the fire service have said that actually initially it's not even possible to tell what gender they are. And because this process then of identification is taking so long, that's very painful for the families. That's why they're still in this terminal building. They don't feel they can go home. Yes, they know that their relatives were on this plane, but of course they need to hear it firsthand. They need that confirmation.
The Boeing 737-800 exploded after it rammed into a wall at the end of the runway. Its landing gear wasn't deployed. Pilot and aviation consultant Tim Atkinson.
The fact that the landing gear is up when the aircraft comes down